Good morning. It's time now for Mountain Money with two unfamiliar voices on this side of the microphone this morning.
I don't know if we're that unfamiliar there, Bob.
Well, in this particular case, we are.
This is so true.
We have a great show in store for you today. Emily Elliott and I have been trusted with this because Larry and Doug are on assignment this
morning.
They
are.
Very important assignment today. No, it's not skiing, but it is an actual assignment this morning. So in studio today, we have Marla Rausch, founder of Animation Vertigo, and a wonderful story. And I must just say, Marla, that I mentioned to one of my kids yesterday, let's see, where do I start? Black Ops 3, Advanced Warfare, Call of Duty, and they all went, whoa! So we'll talk a little bit to Marla about her connection there. Also,
and then in the next segment, we're going to have our own chamber director, Bill Malone, and he's going to be doing a wrap-up of the ski season. If you are interested in still making a few turns, Brighton and Snowbird are still open.
Also coming up, Scott Thompson, about 9:45, the owner of OP Rockwell. He has a new venture. We'll tell you a little bit about that. How about the weather this morning?
Well, we got 61 degrees right now in Heber City. Expected high today under mostly cloudy skies and an expected high of 68. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy, then showers. An 80% chance of showers rolling in with a high of 54. And then a 20% chance of thunderstorms and showers on Wednesday. In Park City, well, pretty much the same thing right now. Outside our China Bridge studios, we're at 54 degrees with a 20% chance of isolated showers, an expected high of 60, 20 to 100% chance of showers happening on Tuesday there, Bob, with a high of 50, and then a chance of rain-snow mix, 50% chance on Wednesday with a high of 55, which is just about right every time all of the Park City ski resorts close, don't you think?
That's about the way it is every year, isn't it? All right, well, we'll have our first guest coming up right after these words.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design. Love your home.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our first guest is Marla Rausch, who is now a Salt Lake resident, but born in the Philippines.
That's right.
Welcome. It's so nice to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob.
And you are in Salt Lake, in Utah, because you now live here. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's true. We live in Cottonwood Heights, loving the area, loving the place. Beautiful sights. Really enjoying the laid-back pace here.
How long have you been in Utah?
A year and a half now. The winter has been very interesting.
I heard you talking about your son wanting to go out and shovel snow.
Oh, yes. For a good 1 week, I was taking advantage of my son just going outside and grabbing the shovel and just going, I want to shovel snow. That ended pretty quickly, and now I have to kind of insist when we need to have our driveways shoveled.
Let's talk just a moment about the reason you're here, a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. I know you're involved in a lot of great undertaking, a lot of charitable events, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, the thing that caught my eye when we wanted to talk about you is a company called Animation Vertigo. Where did the name come from?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, a few years ago when we were starting this in San Diego, I was having this conversation with my husband about what the name, the company that we were setting up. And funnily enough, one of the first words that came out of his mouth was Animation Cowboy. Now, it's a radio show. Nobody can see me, but there's nothing very cowboy about me. So I immediately poo-pooed that. And just at that moment, a U2 song came up, and it was Vertigo. That was the release of their album. And I love that song. That was a song that my husband and I love. The kids love it and everything. So it's one of those things, Animation Vertigo. And it was quite appropriate, because we do motion capture animation.
I was just going to ask, now that we know the name, what exactly do you do?
Ah, well, Animation Vertigo, we do motion capture services, production services. That includes motion capture tracking work, where you see all these probably I should start with what motion capture is.
That's good, yes.
So
did you notice the puzzled look on my face when you were asking, when you were saying that?
Okay. I was trying to ignore that, but
okay.
Motion capture, if anybody has seen recently any of those behind the scenes work where they have the green screens and all those reflective markers on people's bodies, and you know, you had Benedict Cumberbatch wearing those markers when he was trying to be Smaug in the dragon in The Hobbit. That's actually motion capture. It's basically taking what motion on stage and putting it into a 3D environment. So the best way to describe it is making sure that we get realistic human motions and human faces into a 3D environment so that we can work on it on a computer.
I immediately, when I was reading up on all that you do, mm-hmm. I immediately thought of Avatar.
Oh, yes.
And we all saw kind of some behind the scenes of how they invented that and how it was so much easier for the director
yes.
to direct the actors once they're in that motion. Is it a suit? Is it? Because I know in the past, animation, I'm sure, took a lot longer mm-hmm. and a lot harder to direct.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, do the actors get in a suit, and what specifically do you do?
Absolutely. So the actors do get in a suit. It's a very self-conscious suit. If you're not very comfortable with your body, it's a very tight-fitting outfit, and it's like wearing a scuba outfit and then
wetsuit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. With the markers on it, and then there's this huge volume. Well, you have anywhere from, for a production like Avatar size, anywhere from 80 to 200 cameras, basically focusing on you with red lights, and everything's going on you, and all these will be bouncing back from the markers to the camera, and the camera's basically saying, "Oh, I see that, and this is where that is," and that's how it shows up on the computer. What we do is from that moment where they capture all of that motion, when the avatars were talking in a cinematic way and everything, they would send that data over to me. We're then responsible for making sure that whatever was captured on stage is going to be faithfully and hopefully fidelity-wise, we're going to be accurate when we're reproducing it on the computer.
So tell us, for all of our kids, actually, I'm not bad at some of these. Let me tell you, some of these video games you just immediately get into. Tell me how this is incorporated in a video game as opposed to a motion picture.
Okay, so with video games, the only difference that I see is generally the turnaround time. With video games, you have about a year where you do about 3 months of shooting. You have game development companies that already have an idea of what motions they're going to be capturing. For example, with Call of Duty, they're making sure that all of their running and all of their shooting, all of their dying, the dying especially is quite interesting. When that's all happening, that they have about 3 months of shooting. And as the 3 months go for shooting, you're also doing all of the back end work and also doing all the animation for that. So you have about a year before they're going to be scheduled to release. And generally it's about the same time, either before Christmas or sometime during the summers. And the biggest difference between games and film is really the amount of work that you're going to be shooting and the amount of time that you have. With film, generally, you might have anywhere from 2 to 3 years, depending. For example, James Cameron right now is working on Avatar 2 and 3, and that's been on the works for a while now because they have the script, the production. I believe they're also doing the back-end stuff where they're trying to do research and development on how to do water motion capture. So that's interesting, even for me, because it's like, how do you do it? That's reflecting everything. That's water. So that's quite interesting.
I want to drop back a minute. You smiled and said something about how difficult dying was. It's just, okay, you can't do that. You have to tell me why it's so difficult.
There's a lot of dying in Black Ops.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
And Call of Duty.
Yes.
A lot of dying.
Yeah. Yes, Mortal Kombat. That's another one.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
That one. It's quite graphic, too. But my guys are amazing because they have seen all of this, these ways that people die. And they actually have come to tell me one particular week where it's like, is there any way we can get anything like, you know, dancing? Dancing would be nice today because I've seen so many ways that people can be killed. I'd really like something to lift my spirits. But it's interesting because motion capture tries to make sure that when you're capturing emotion, you're truly making sure that it's realistic. An anecdote that someone once told me was during the filming of, I think it was SOCOM for Sony, some of the Navy SEALs, retired Navy SEALs, were throwing out, you know, ideas on how people were getting killed and things. And one of the guys said, okay, so you can shoot them in the head and they fall backwards. And it's like, and, you know, they stagger a little bit and they fall. It's like, and straight up, the actor says, no, actually, if you shoot them in the head, they fall down like a sack of potatoes. And I can't tell you how everybody in that studio just kind of went, oh. Because you realize, oh, is that how people... But then you get the different kinds of deaths mm-hmm. on Call of Duty and Mortal Kombat. And it's just an interesting week in a day in the life of a motion capture artist, I think.
You know, this all sounds very expensive. It sounds like what you do and the hours you put in. But not only that, but the actual technology.
Yes.
I'm sure in today's age, you're constantly updating. How much does it cost to do something like this?
Well, Emily, I have to tell you, it is not cheap. Motion capture, when you talk about cameras that cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 per camera, and you're talking about requiring stages, especially when you have stunts that require huge spaces, it's not a cheap endeavor. Certainly the console games and PC games that we have from Sony, Activision, EA, for example, those require a lot of a big chunk of their budget. And we're only talking about the body side, when you're capturing the body motion. The bigger project nowadays is face motion. It's the facial expressions that they're now trying to make more and more realistic. Nowadays, if you watch or see any of the trailers for video games and you're trying to see, you're looking at their faces, you're noticing more and more that they have a more... cinematic, almost film quality to their faces, to the way they do things. And it's due to the fact that technology is changing, and in that technology, it comes with a bit of expense. You have, so now when you've seen the back end of body capture, the facial capture is even interesting because now they're wearing head cameras that has, you know, that may or may not have markers on their faces, with or without cameras on their faces. And this is all part and parcel of the whole thing. So you can go anywhere from, I've heard of shoots that cost anywhere from $25,000 a day just to get the actor, the shots in, the stage in and everything. And that's just capturing the motion. You're not even talking about post-production where you're cleaning it up and putting it in animation. So it is quite an endeavor.
Let's talk about post-production. I assume that's what's being done in Manila.
Yes, that's right.
Your staff there of 50?
Yes, 50 people.
That's a lot of folks.
It's a lot of folks, and they work about 24/6, so mm-hmm. it's 6 days a week. We do 8-hour shifts. Animation's not big on having... quality time sometimes, especially when you're talking about crunch time, when you're 19 hours at work and things like that. I try to give my guys a little bit of you know, a life outside of work because that's something I truly believe in. So they have 8 hours of work every day for 6 days. It's a little trifling with 6 days, but that gives us the opportunity to make sure that when our clients come to us and say, hey, listen, we need this right away, we know we can start working on it. And we have about 16 hours between the time they gave it to us and then the time we can give it back to them. So that when they come back, you know, having their cup of coffee, walking back in after sending us the data, there would be at least a few sets of data already available for them, for their animators to start working on.
In 16 hours.
And that's our goal. It's really to make sure that... We provide the clients with the ability to do their work, their animators to do their amazing jobs, so that you can produce the quality video games and film in the under budget or as close to budget as you can.
Let's go into the facility there in Manila, mm-hmm. and if I were to walk down a hallway or down a row, what would one person be doing for 8 hours?
All right. So what? First thing, one of the biggest things for any external development company is when you're sending any piece of intellectual property out, is the protection of it. So if you're going to be walking down the corridor without a special ID, you're going to be stopped at the production door and you're not going to be allowed in. Or if you walk in, they'll turn off their monitors and you can't see anything. But generally, when you walk in, you're going to find about 20 people sitting or 12 people sitting on their machines, sometimes with headphones because they're listening to audio when they're doing any of the facial data. Sometimes the body data, they're watching it, and you're just going to see basically what looks like lines and dots on a screen. And they're looking at them with different colors, and they're making sure that these look like human beings. They look like skeletons that are moving across the screen, and they're making sure that they look like a human being and not like, you know, broken down human beings with broken arms or things like that. And a lot of chattering, a lot of laughing, and a lot of standing up and trying to figure out where hands would be. We actually have props in our office, in our studio, where they would pick it up and say, no, this is how you would hold that gun. So their fingers should actually be this way. The funniest thing I've ever walked into was walking into the production floor and seeing two of my guys actually dancing. And I was like, what are you? It was a waltz, and they were trying to figure out where their feet were because it wasn't clear. So they were actually standing and dancing. That was kind of funny.
We're talking to Marla, is it Roush?
Roush.
Roush, I got it. She's CEO and founder of Animation Vertigo. It's a motion capture animation company. She's been involved in video game franchises such as Call of Duty and Mortal Kombat. What's your current project right now?
Oh, it's a really good project, okay. Emily. It's an amazing project. I'm super excited to talk about it. I'm thinking in the next couple of months or so I would be able to say it, but it's a video game that's based on a very great film franchise. And really excited to see it come out. It's taking a lot of our guys' time at the moment.
But if you tell us, you have to kill us, is that what it is?
Yes, and then after that, my clients would be hunting me down, I think.
Okay, good. Just checking on it. Just making sure you're keeping busy.
Absolutely.
So these 50-odd employees, you really have to trust that they can't carry anything out of there at the end of the day.
Absolutely. In fact, we are so strict with how much we value confidentiality that they're not allowed to bring any smartphones or any sort of disc into the production floor. They've actually, do you remember those Nokia analog phones, the ones that falls mm-hmm. to the ground, breaks down, and it doesn't matter, you can put it back together, it still works. Mm-hmm. Oh, and which batteries last forever.
Great.
So those are the analog phones that they're using inside because they're not allowed to take pictures. You can't store any data on their phones or anything, so that won't allow them. So having an analog phone there so that they can still text their friends and things like that is pretty important, as well as hiring them full time. The most difficult thing in the Philippines is, especially in animation, is hiring people full time because of the nature of the work where you have projects now and then later on you don't have projects. It's easier for people to contract instead of hire them full time. But I really think that animation is a good way for people to make a living out of it. So you need full time people. You need people that you trust to stay there for a longer term, and also that you're able to take care of them and they'll do great work back for you.
What kind of education do they have to have? How do you find this staff?
Unlike a few years ago, where I think animation schools weren't so available, certainly during my time when I was first starting, animation, especially motion capture animation, wasn't quite as prolific as it comes now. But nowadays, there's actually schools that do, well, not in the Philippines but for motion capture, but animation, 3D animation in various forms. So I look for people who are technically good, because what mostly that we do is beyond just the creative, it is technical. It's making sure that we know the scripts, we know the how something should look like, how to make it work if something's not working right. And so we look for people who have the animation eye, but with a technical background. So we look for people who can script, we look for people who can understand, even if they can't script so well, at least they can understand scripting languages well enough, or Python languages well enough, to where they can change a few things and make it work for them. There's a few schools there. I like finding people who are just fresh out of college or a couple of years in workforce, because then they're not struggling too much with dealing with what they would call a traditional 3D animation compared to motion capture animation.
Okay.
Actually, the University of Utah has a video game side of it in their engineering department.
That's true. We actually visited with the UFU. One of the first few things that we I did here when we came out was to visit with the UFU to see what was around, because definitely when we first moved to Utah, one of the first things I wanted to do was familiarize myself with what was around and what was available in the area, because as much as Animation Vertigo does a lot of service work from the Philippines, we do hire from the U.S. as well for technical people and people who might be interested in traveling and learning and growing, and that's something that we like to be able to provide as well.
Is language a barrier?
No, as a matter of fact. I was born and raised in the Philippines, and even my daughter asked me yesterday, strangely enough, why is it that a lot of Filipinos speak English? And I said, well, English is the language they teach from school. That's how we learn math, science, and English. And then there's few subjects there that's actually taught in the vernacular. So English is not a problem. Even the Western humor is not a problem. The sarcasm and things like that, it's not a problem because everybody understands it. I think the more difficult ones comes from the British side, because the humor is a little less.
The dry humor, yes.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Let's switch gears for a moment. I know you're also passionate about giving back to organizations, particularly those that support the entrepreneurial spirit and mentor girls and women. Tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about that.
Well, it's something that was definitely something near and dear to my heart. Being in an industry where there's mostly men, it's pretty tough to find kindred spirits. We find ourselves growing. There's more and more women that I find, especially when we go to game developers conferences and things like that. More and more women are involved in motion capture and animation and technology. But it really starts with our girls, our young girls, middle school, high school. Some of them are interested when they start, but then halfway through we find that they start falling off from the harder sciences, harder programming, and they start going into the, computer communications. And I was like, what is that one? Or computer management, what is that one? And less on the harder science side. So it's something that I started doing in Orange County, where we moved from, where we worked with Girls Inc. and we worked with UCI for mentorship for women who were studying computer sciences. And one in particular was computer gaming science, which, you know, if that was done 20 years ago, I think a lot of us would be a little bit more educated on this. But it's something that's very near and dear to my heart, because we need a different view. We need a view of women in video games, in motion capture, in technology. Not because the view is skewed, but because it's limited. There's more that we can see, create, if a woman's perspective can also be taken in. So I get involved in that.
That's fascinating. Well, thank you for coming. I know you had to drive up today, and we appreciate you doing that. And there, we could spend another 2 or 3 hours. It's such a fascinating subject.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And it's a beautiful place here in Park City.
We will have you come back.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
Marla Rausch is our guest this hour from Animation Vertigo, here in studio with, and I'm going to try to get her to give me the name of this project that you're working on.
You'll be subject to
you
death.
You can whisper in my ear.
In a very dramatic way.
Okay. All right. Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
Up in the next half hour, we have our chamber director, Bill Malone.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. The Epic School Kids program gives all children across the state of Utah from kindergarten through fifth grade 5 days of skiing plus 1 day rental and lesson. More information at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Emily Elliott is here with me, and also our next guest is Bill Malone, the director of the Chamber of Commerce here in Park City. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me today.
So I hear you're going to give us a ski season wrap-up. How timely is this?
Well, it's pretty timely. Having just finished up my last day yesterday and putting the clothes in the dirty clothes.
You did get out, everything. Huh?
Yeah, it was a great day out
good
there.
Good for you.
On that. But, yeah, I mean, some things we're able to take a snapshot of and look at the season. And I think anecdotally everybody has a good idea, you know, as you work through the season. Some of the numbers don't come in for quite some time, but yeah, it was a really, really strong season for us here. And you know, when you get the kind of snow that we got over the period of time that we got it in, it worked very, very well for us.
Remember when we were all complaining in November that there was no snow?
It was hard to...
We were all crying.
Right, that Thanksgiving time frame, and then the snow started. And you know, some of the things that happen when it's not just the amount of snow, but it's when it snows. And so those people who are here experiencing a fabulous Christmas vacation time skiing, we're going back to their offices and telling their coworkers back east and on the West Coast as to, well, you know, how great a season it was. And then that kind of carries us through into January, February, and March. So I think when I look back, you know, thinking about that that struggle at the very beginning and a little bit of angst that we all had, when you look at it from an occupancy standpoint in the hotel business, snapshot for this past winter, December was up slightly, about 2%. Increase in occupancy over the previous year.
Now, do you just compare it to last year, or do you have like a series of five-year
No, those are compared to last year. We typically look, but we do have some charts and graphs on our website that'll show you some of them, you know, in a very long, long period of time to see it. But this past January was up 6% in occupancy, and February was up 3%. March and April were pretty flat compared to last year, but you know, that's a pretty strong season to experience those. So when we see the skier day number, we don't see that actual number for quite some time yet. But the fact last year, our two ski resorts here in the community did about 1.93 million skier days, and kind of looking at that lodging occupancy and the amount of snow that we had and local, you know, skier traffic that you know, in terms of people using their passes, it's probably pretty easy guess to say that we could be up to the 2 million skier day mark, which is an all-time high.
So you measure this by the skier passes used, mm-hmm. as opposed to other events such as Sundance or whatever?
Yeah, those are just basically one person skiing one day. So when you look at a skier day on that, it's a pretty interesting number when you look at that, because approximately 43% of all the skier days in the state of Utah occur right here in Park City. And so our two ski resorts are really the big leaders of the industry as it relates to Utah skiing. So the difference is that our skier days are much more skewed towards destination skiers than some of the other ski resorts around the state that are more local oriented.
That's very interesting. When you talk about 1, 2, or 3%, can you put a dollar figure to that in any way?
Actually, it's kind of interesting because when you look at the dollars, while the occupancy increased by those, the average daily rate in the lodging business in the community increased by greater numbers than that. So it's not just simply a math of the number of people; it's the number of people and the growth in terms of the actual rate on that. I think we had the average daily rate for the community we see as getting close to a 10% increase in terms of that average daily rate. So while the occupancy increase was smaller, the rate is larger, and therefore the tax revenues that the city and the county generate out of the winter season become potentially greater as it moves forward. So if you look at it over a longer period of time, you'll see that while visitation has increased over, let's say, since 2010, in single digit, increase over that period of time in terms of the amount of visitors, the tax revenue generated over that since 2010 has been in close to the 50% range of increase in terms of taxes on rooms, restaurants, resort city sales tax in the case of the city. So those have been very large, with not so much in terms of the number of people, but the amount of money that people spend while they're here.
I'm sorry, I was just going to ask that. Do you have an idea of how many, like per person, how much is spent while mm-hmm. they're here on
yeah.
vacation?
In excess of about $425 per person. In the
man,
the
woman, and child.
Man, woman, and child.
Wow.
In the winter time here in the community. So it's we always say that you can't go much more than about 45 minutes before you spend money again while you're here. So it's a pretty impressive number in terms of the per person per day expenditure.
Is that inclusive of lift tickets?
Yes.
So if we subtract lift tickets, can you take it down to tourist locations, to meals, to lodging?
Do that periodically. We didn't do that this year in terms of where the spending is. We do mm-hmm. have research that's being done each winter on our guests, and we do part of that ask in terms of that research is to find out how the spending occurs. But offhand, I don't have any numbers on that. But just generally, if you looked at it in excess of $425 per person per day on that, it's a pretty healthy number. When you compare it to a summer expenditure, which is more in the $100, mm-hmm. the $150 per day expenditure in the summertime. So while the same product might be consumed, let's say a hotel room may be consumed in the winter, it would be at a much higher rate than that same hotel room consumed in the summer.
So
are more similar to one another.
What is the average rate for just overnight stay?
Well, it's a real wide range here because you're talking everything from a motel mm-hmm. in Kimball Junction to the Montage. Mm-hmm. And so when you average it all together, our numbers are coming somewhere in the neighborhood of about, in the wintertime, about $500 per day in terms of lodging that's coming. That same price in the summer is closer to $250,
right.
In terms of the average.
And how many visitors did we have this? I mean, I know you said numbers are up, so what are we talking?
Yeah, well, I mean, if skier days are always a mm-hmm. good choice, but you have to figure in that skier day number is local usage in terms of our passes on that. In general, we're probably for the wintertime somewhere in the neighborhood, and it will be around our guesstimate because there's no toll gate that we can actually count. We look at the types of rooms and how they're occupied and how many people typically in whether it's a hotel room or a condominium. But we're probably in the neighborhood of about 1.6 million visitor nights
And that's from, what you say, opening to closing
That's
day?
Opening to closing.
Opening to closing.
Yeah. Typically, in a year here, we'll entertain about 3 million visitor nights. So if somebody comes here, spends five nights, that's five visitor nights. So.
Right.
If you look at summer as opposed to winter, are summer visitors mostly perhaps from the Wasatch Front more than they would be during the winter, or is it about an equal situation?
No, it's more local and regional in summer business. In the summer, you can pretty much, for our leisure customer, draw kind of a 600-mile radius around here and say people could drive in from Southern California and Arizona, et cetera, that would drive in. In the winter, our guests predominantly our two biggest markets in the wintertime is New York and Los Angeles. Our two biggest markets, followed by Chicago, and then kind of everybody lumped together from Washington, D.C. to Florida to Texas. In that. So, but the one thing that's been kind of the change in terms of the summer business is in this since the Great Recession and how, business has picked up, we've picked up a significant amount of business from corporate business travel in the summer. So at some of our larger properties that have meeting space, 50% of their business in the summertime is corporate group. Travel. So that's a great customer to go after because many times they're here on the company dime. They have great accommodations. They'll have some meetings, but they're not heavy on the meeting side because if they were, why would they be coming here? Why wouldn't they be in Chicago at that meeting? So they want to get out. They want to do the fly fishing and bike riding and enjoy all the things we have, but they can do it under the umbrella of a retreat, business retreat or incentive travel for salespeople within large companies. So that's been kind of the real growth side for our summer business in the last few years has been more so on going after that corporate meeting group here to come to town. And you can spot it. Last summer and going out to dinner and sitting in a restaurant on Main Street, and when you see the door open and here comes, eight gentlemen and four ladies, coming in, sitting down, eating together, you kind of figure they're here for a corporate retreat.
Talking to some old timers say, we used to have a shoulder season. We don't anymore. It's busy year round. But I walked down Main Street this morning and there are restaurants that are closed.
Yeah.
Till May. Yeah. Well, is there just not enough for them, or they've had enough and they're going to go somewhere?
I think it's a combination of both. We do have a shoulder season, and it might not be as long as it once was. Mm-hmm. But we do. I mean, you walk down the street today, and you'll see people have checked out.
It's a lot different from when I came here 25 years ago. Let me tell you.
Well, we still, it's nice in Park City, we do refer to it as a shoulder season and not necessarily as a mud season as some other communities.
We're talking to Bill Malone, director of the Chamber, who's given us a wrap-up of the ski season. So, Bill, real quickly, besides our fabulous word of mouth, how word spreads about it's snowing in Park City, what else does the Chamber do in order to get people here?
Well, we have pretty extensive campaign each winter in terms of trying to generate what we call kind of that top funnel of the marketplace in terms of having people consider us as the place to go. We've got a lot of strengths and those have been communicated over the years. Accessibility. Being one of those key messages that we try to disseminate out in the marketplace. But if you look at it overall, we'll do a certain amount of advertising, primarily in our major markets. This last year, we did a television campaign prior to Christmas, and then one after Christmas in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Much of our marketing is digital. Now and serving up the ads to the right people at the right time, we feel on that. A big chunk of what we do in terms of trying to get that consideration as a destination of where someone would want to spend the discretionary income that they have and come here and enjoy a ski holiday is in the communication side with media. This last year, the amount of articles and on both online and in print that have been written about us this last year equal, we look at that at about $32 million worth of value that has been written about us on that. And then there's an international component to it as well that we go after in terms of those long-haul and long-stay vacationers from Australia and the UK and Brazil and Mexico.
When you talk about, you know, somebody said so many of these houses are empty except during ski season. Is that a lot of what you're counting as far as skier days, the people that are coming to stay in these places? Or are they just because they're here for 2 weeks here and 2 weeks there? Does that make a big difference?
We don't count them necessarily in the lodging industry. And there's that entirely what we refer to as the gray market, mm-hmm. Out there that is in terms of Airbnb and the HomeAways. And those, we don't have a really good grasp of the numbers and the impact from that. But they do reflect in terms of the taxable revenue in the community, in terms of their spending, in terms of lift ticket purchase, et cetera. So
it's an asset. It's a real asset.
It is an asset, and it's nice that those properties are paying that full property tax value as well in terms as secondary residences.
We like that.
Yes.
Bill Malone, thank you very much. Gosh, we could go on and on and on.
Thank you. We enjoyed being here.
I hope you come back.
I certainly will.
And we also want to thank you for sponsoring Mountain Money from the Park City Chamber. So thank you all. And you need to come back soon so we can continue this discussion.
Great. Thanks.
Coming up in studio, Scott Thompson, owner of OP Rockwell.
Hello, I'm Justin Keyes. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support Mountain Money on KPCW. Our firm provides construction, real estate, and general business legal services to the Park City community. We are online at joneswaldo.com and can be reached at 435-200-0085.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Good morning, it's Mountain Money. This is Bob Hendricks. I'm here with Emily Elliott. I don't know why I can't say your name today.
You know, it's a tongue twister when you don't have enough caffeine, let me tell you.
Well, I've been here since 4:30 this morning, so I'm about ready for a nap. Also with us today, we have Scott Thompson, owner of OP Rockwell, and you have something, a new adventure you're jumping into here.
We do. After OP Rockwell, we put a group together to buy the building, 268 Main Street, which was the original Dudler building back in the late 1800s and was originally a brewery and a dance hall and a lot of really fun stuff. So we decided to go take our upstairs space, which is approximately 6,000 square feet, and turn it into flex office space, an office club, if you will.
An office club. Now, that's an interesting.
Is that like co-working space?
It
sounds like a whole lot more fun.
Well, we're in Park City, so we decided to make it a little bit more fun than just co-working. I mean, you should have seen us last week. It's basically done. We have a few things that we're still doing. We're pulling fiber to the building. So we have gigabit speeds to the wireless to every office that we have. We have about 14 different offices. Last we were watching the Masters working on our computers. Whenever somebody had to make a phone call or do something, private, a private meeting, they just used one of the offices, and it worked perfectly. And it was just a really a good synergy of people hanging out. Some people didn't know each other at that time, but now they do. And, I think through that, collaboration will exist. Not forced, just, I equate it to the Thin Air Festival that we just had. And the reason they came up with the Thin Air theme is that you get a group of people together and you start talking about business or life or whatever, and it's amazing what ideas pop out of thin air. And
it sounds like, are you going to have some sort of criteria to your tenants coming in or the people who are occupying these private offices?
No, not necessarily at all.
Just come on in.
Yeah, come on in. I mean, it's so far it's been a lot of entrepreneurs. A lot of people that their main offices may exist in New York or Chicago or San Francisco elsewhere, and they travel a lot. And they just want to be around people that are business people, are creative, are smart. I mean, there's so many smart people in this town. But sometimes they, you know, your friends are only the ones that your kids go to school with. And it's hard to escape that when that's all that exists. Instead of here, it's a chance to really to introduce yourself to professionals like yourself.
If I'm in town, can I just drop in? Is there a space where, you know, I'm not renting one on a regular basis?
Well, we have a product for that, especially for folks that live here maybe a couple months out of the year. And that's a drop-in. It's 10 days a month. It's $350. We're still trying to figure out our pricing model. Right now what exists is 10 days a month you can drop in for $350 a month. For $650, it's almost like a virtual office. You can come in any day of the week during business hours. You just don't have a private office. And the tweak on that is that I have 14 private offices, and I will sell, hopefully, half of those to permanent office users at $1,300 a month. And that gives you the virtual office. It gives you 268 Main Street business address. We'll have a concierge on site handling packages and mail and phone calls and all sorts of making sure that the whole office environment is what we want. So at this point, we have three different products. If you wanted to double up on an office with a friend or a colleague or something like that, that product exists as well. So,
what other amenities do you have? I mean, this is sounding just like another co-working office space, correct?
Correct.
So what else do you have? I mean, is there some other amenities? Sounds like you have, I see here you have beverage service. I mean, people always love that sound.
That's dangerous.
That can be dangerous.
And we do have a kitchen, full kitchen. Okay. And the right now, like the refrigerator is stocked with waters and Coca-Cola and
that's it?
And all sorts of stuff, right?
Kidding.
Well, you can come down to O.P. Rockwell and grab a cocktail if you'd like.
Is there a connection? Is there a stairway connection?
There is actually a connection. So we're opening up the connection, the internal stairway, so you don't have to go outside to get into O.P. Rockwell. And then the future exists on the main floor for a restaurant, coffee shop, and a couple of other different things. So that's in the works right now. So every floor, the plan is every floor working together to benefit one another. And that was always when we bought the building, that was always the goal, is to create something with synergies on every single floor. And it's slowly starting to happen. It's crazy how these things, you put them in motion and it does take a while, but once they're up and running, it's like they've always existed.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, but you also asked what's different, and instead of cubicles, we have, or workstations, we have big area couches and big screen TVs, places that you can feel comfortable opening up your computer and working, but also with having several offices that are going to be not vacant, but available, you can break out and go have meetings or go make phone calls or go have your private sessions. So it's a balance between work and hanging out and just being in a place. I love going up there. I work out of the house, and I love going up to the office now.
So this gives you another opportunity or a space to go to as opposed to sitting in the coffee shop or sitting in your home with screaming kids.
Yes, exactly. There's a need. There's a necessity. I used to work off on Lower Main Street for years, 13 years ago, 614 Main Street. And now all of those floors, well, actually two of the floors that I used to work on are now residential condos. They're beautiful residential condos, but the Main Street workspace is starting to shrink. It was out of necessity that this was born.
I noticed that two conference rooms. If I'm not one of your clients, can I reserve a conference room and bring a group in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And furthermore, we can, if you have a big conference, let's say you have 20, 25 people, well, we could utilize the O.P. Rockwell as well. So the conference rooms are great. They fit about 6 to 8 people. If it's something that we could schedule you for the, we call it the green room, but we block out the living room. If you go online, you can take a look at the pictures that we have so far.
Okay.
But it's
rockwellroom.com.
Rockwellroom.com.
Okay. Interesting.
And also on Facebook. But it's funny, OP Rockwell, we had a private party where we had Gavin DeGraw play. And he required a little bit nicer green room that existed at OP Rockwell. And so we actually used the upstairs living room as their green room. And literally, as I was walking away after, you know, setting them up, they're like, whoa, this place is cool. I was so psyched. It was great.
Do you do that for a lot of bands?
we will. I mean, that's something that we'll be able to offer some of the larger corporate parties when they bring in bigger bands and when we start to do so as well.
And quickly, why don't you tell us your lineup for OP Rockwell? Because you got some great groups coming in.
What?
You don't know? All right, go to the website. Is that what you're saying, Scott?
Yeah. I don't want to screw that one up.
I was curious about going back if you are going to be one of the permanent residents. Do you have to furnish your own, bring in your own desk, your own credenza, your own whatever, or is that just right there for you?
Well, that's a phenomenal question because we've taken great pains in putting all this furniture together, so every single office is furnished. And when you get a permanent office, I actually I buy you a fern and a picture for the wall.
Excellent. I'm in.
My gift to you.
Fern in a picture, huh?
Yeah.
I can see. Well, it sounds like it's necessary. It's really needed now here in this community.
I think so, especially on Main Street. You know, it's also something that what we're trying to create is, I live in Silver Springs, and the amount of people that I talk to that just don't make it to Main Street anymore is, I mean, it's everybody. So we're trying to create something where people want to come from, you know, different areas around town, want to come to Main Street.
This is probably not a good question to ask, but what about parking?
I was just going to actually, Bob, you read my mind. I'm like, does this include parking?
Oh, I've thought a lot about this. No, I mean, the times that this is being used, and again, I've been on Main Street for the last 13 years. When I come to the office at, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, there's plenty of parking. There's absolutely plenty of parking up until the afternoon. You know, at 4 o'clock, it starts getting a little bit. But typically, people in an office environment are out of their space by that time. So we're actually utilizing the space more appropriately, or, you know, it's an easy place to park. Now, parking tickets might be an issue, and I ran into that a few times with a boot or two. But that's something that you deal with and you manage, especially with the new parking app that they have and utilizing Sweet Alley. You're utilizing the parking better when you're here in the morning, and that's really the office space.
Thank you, Scott, for coming in. We appreciate it, and good luck on this new adventure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And for people who want to check it out, or the website again?
The website, rockwellroom.com.
And to book it through you, best place?
Best place is to fill out the form on the website, and I'll get back to them right away.
Excellent.
Our guest this morning, Marla Rausch, former, rather founder of Animation Vertigo, Park City Chamber Director Bill Malone, and Scott Thompson from OP Rockwell. And thanks to our great sponsors for Mountain Money, Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City Columbus Properties. We'll be back to wind things up in just a moment. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you. Thank you for listening to KPCW Park City. We're coming up on 1 minute past 10 o'clock. And thanks again to our guests today, and Larry and Doug back with you next week. It's time for NPR.